fills and kind of just, you know, good community building too.
Yeah, it makes sense. I mean, there's sometimes you can watch a YouTube video and fix something, but then, you know, you might have that knowledge now, so you can pass it to somebody else and know how to, because I don't know, it's no good when you've got something sitting around and you keep meaning to fix it and you don't do it. I got to clean a couple of things, some appliances, and I keep putting it off. I got to do it. Got to do it. You know, it needs a water sort of fixing coffee pot thing, and I haven't done it in a while. But I know, not the same thing, but the things you mean to get to, you know, that keep your life running.
Yep. Support for KAXE comes from North Homes Children and Family Services, providing compassionate mental health services to children and families at home, school, and in the community. More information at northhomes.org.
And thanks goes out to the Minnesota Deer Hunters Association, dedicated to conserving the rich ecological landscape of Minnesota with memberships, educational camps, and habitat projects. MNDeerHunters.com.
It's a minute after 8 o'clock. This is 91.7 KAXE Grand Rapids, 90.5 KBXE Bagley, Bemidji. We operate translator K210DR in Brainerd at 89.9. Since 1976, Northern Community Radio has been telling the stories of the people and the land of Northern Minnesota through music, news, conversation, and events. You can find us at KAXE.org or ask your smart speaker. Keep KAXE people powered into the future with your support now. You can text the word donate to 218-326-1234. Thanks for your support.
Some rain coming down in the region, including Grand Rapids. Mostly cloudy today with a chance of showers and thunderstorms this afternoon. Highs 85 to 92. Southeast winds could gust 5 to 15, could gust higher. Showers and thunderstorms likely tonight. Lows in the low to mid 60s.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Nora Rahm. Frustration is growing in Venezuela following last week's earthquake that killed more than 1,400 people. Tens of thousands of people are still missing. As John Otis reports, survivors claim the government's response has been slow and inept.
That's a backhoe digging through the ruins of a 12-story building that collapsed here in the coastal town of Los Corales. But local residents say the government backhoe operator never showed up, so they had to pay for one. Many are incensed by government paralysis and bureaucracy. The security forces have been accused of looting. Doctors and rescue workers have faced delays getting to the disaster zone because they lacked government permits. All this is costing lives, says Rosalia Bustamante, who lost several friends when the building collapsed. There were people in the ruins responding when we called out to them, she says, but now they are dead. For NPR News, I'm John Otis in Los Corales, Venezuela.
Congress passed a bipartisan bill last week designed to make housing more affordable, but President Trump refused to sign it into law until Congress approves the Save America Act. Legislation to impose voting restrictions that does not have bipartisan support. House Speaker Mike Johnson told Fox News yesterday he thinks the president will change his mind.
I'm going to send the bill over to him. It's passed by both chambers. I'm sending it to him on Monday, and it will become law. And I certainly want him to take the biggest, boldest marker that he has and do that big Trump signature proudly on that legislation, because we're delivering for the people, and that's what he wants to do.
But if the president still doesn't sign it, it would become law in 10 days without his signature, as long as Congress is in session. Colorado is mourning the loss of three firefighters who died in a wildfire near the Utah border. Two firefighters were seriously injured in the Snyder Mesa fire, which has charred almost 30,000 acres and is still 0% contained. Colorado Public Radio's Stina Sieg reports.
In a statement, Governor Jared Polis said he's, quote, devastated by the loss of three heroic firefighters who died in the line of duty. He expressed his solidarity with their families and crew members. Five firefighters and a federal crew deployed their fire shelters Saturday as they battled a blaze near the Utah border. Only two survived, both with serious injuries. The governor has declared a state of emergency for the Snyder Mesa fire, one of many large wildfires burning across the West. For NPR News, I'm Stina Sieg in Grand Junction, Colorado.
A heat wave is expected this week in the central and eastern U.S., affecting more than a third of all states. It could last into the 4th of July weekend. This is NPR News. France's public health agency reports a surge in deaths, more than 1,000 people more than usual during the heat wave that has gripped Europe for more than a week. Temperatures reached record highs in several countries as the heat wave slowly moves towards Eastern Europe. In Germany, authorities found a way to cool off tourists at the Brandenburg Gate in Berlin. They used water cannons, usually used to disperse unruly protesters, to spray cool water on the crowd. Hollywood is in the middle of a hot streak, and not just because of the weather. NPR's Bob Mondello has details.
This summer always looked promising, with Toy Story 5 and Devil Wears Prada 2 on the menu.
Oh, that's not what you're wearing to the dinner. That's all.
But no one expected low-budget horror flicks, Obsession and Backrooms, and the Michael Jackson biopic Michael to contribute another $600 million.
I believe music could change the world.
This year is currently running about even with 2019, when Avengers Endgame was supercharging ticket sales. Still to come this summer, Spider-Man Brand New Day, Christopher Nolan's The Odyssey, and Minions and Monsters. Which has some observers predicting North American box office will top $10 billion this year. One caveat, in dollar terms, that's a return to pre-pandemic levels, but ticket prices have risen, so it's still fewer people. Bob Mondello, NPR News.
As soccer's World Cup, the men's competition has hit the knockout stage, meaning win or go home. Yesterday, co-host Canada beat South Africa to advance to the round of 16. The U.S. team plays Bosnia-Herzegovina on Wednesday. I'm Nora Rahm, NPR News in Washington.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include Lilly Endowment, a private foundation supporting NPR's coverage of religion and spirituality, and Jarl and Pamela Mohn, focusing on civil liberties, foster youth, public radio, and the arts.
It is 8:07. Thanks for listening to KAXE and the Monday Morning Show. I'm Jennifer Barr with Heidi Holton. Support comes from ICTV, providing information for and about Itasca County on Apple TV, Roku, and watchictv.org.
We would also like to thank Happy Dancing Turtle for their support. Clicking, a nonprofit organization dedicated to growing stewards through education, programs, and experiences. More information at happydancingturtle.org. Hope you're having a good Monday morning. Thanks for being with us. We've got a lot going on, and at 9 o'clock, music with Headwaters with Kari Headland.
It's kind of a steamy morning out there with fog and mist in some areas, and our temperatures are already in the upper 60s to already 70 degrees in Brainerd. Our highs today, 85 to 92. There is a chance of showers and possible thunderstorms. And showers and thunderstorms likely overnight with lows in the mid-60s. And then tomorrow should be sunny, warm once again, highs in the mid to upper 80s. Coming up in just a bit, we're going to talk with Happy Dancing Turtle about their upcoming Fix It events.
I'm fixing a hole where the rain gets in and stops my mind from wandering where it will go. I'm filling the cracks that ran through the door and kept my mind from wandering where it will. And it really doesn't matter if I'm wrong, I'm right.
important yesterday, and I still go.
That's the Beatles with Fixing a Hole here on the Monday Morning Show as we get ready for our conversation, our Bright Spot conversation with Happy Dancing Turtle. Bright Spot is a chance to highlight good things happening across northern Minnesota. We live in a throwaway society, but there are groups springing up both locally and nationally that are trying to change that. Nonprofit Happy Dancing Turtle is looking for volunteers to be part of local Fix-It events. Here to tell us more is Jenny Hill from Happy Dancing Turtle. Good morning.
Hello.
Good morning, Jenny. Thanks for being here.
I'm very glad to be here.
Yeah. So when I first heard of this idea of Fix-It clinics and Earth These events, what came to my mind was when I was young, the idea of Fix-It shops were like kind of in my mind from Sesame Street. There was the Fix-It shop with Luis and Maria. I also had a book about a Fix-It shop in this, but never really coming across these in real life. So just, I love this idea that we're bringing the Fix-It shop into our world.
Yes. I mean, I know of a handful of Fix-It places, and unfortunately, like some other small business, they seem to be disappearing. And hopefully as we develop these free events, people will gain confidence in their Fix-It skills and interest will build, and maybe we'll get more Fix-It shops back in our communities as well. That would be like a triple win.
Yeah. You know, because you hear people all the time that it's a different world now. Like sometimes people are used to like you have to replace your dishwasher more often, and because it'll cost more to get it fixed than it would to buy a new thing. And it's like, it's just people, I hear people so frustrated with that, but they don't feel like they have anywhere to go or to turn or anything. You know, that's our only choice, is just to keep buying more things and getting rid of that stuff.
It can feel very mysterious. And I don't know, a lot of people might not be aware that in 2024, Minnesota passed right to repair legislation. And there's been several states across, you know, across our country that have done that. And what that guarantees is that manufacturers must provide documentation for the items they sell, as well as make parts readily available. I think it's like reasonably accessible. So that means, you know, you can find it on the web probably, and that you can afford to purchase it or download it or, you know, access those parts.
Okay. Huh. That is interesting. Well, let's talk a little bit about Happy Dancing Turtle that puts together these interesting sorts of events in our region. How are things going there this summer? Kind of tell us who you are.
Yeah, so Happy Dancing Turtle is a nonprofit dedicated to growing good stewards of the planet. We provide education programs and experiences for youth and adults around nature, the environment, and resilient living. And a growing part of my work is around reuse. Many of us have too much stuff, and reuse is a great alternative to sending things to the landfill. So in the category of reuse, I'm talking about swaps. We've held several swap events at Happy Dancing Turtle over the last year for things like holiday decorations, craft supplies, animal care, outdoor recreation. People just bring in their stuff for free. We've had tremendous response to that. Both people who are bringing things. I've had so many people as they're dropping their things off before the swap thank me, you know, that this is finally a place they found that they could take the stuff. They know it's going to get reused. It's, you know, you feel good when you've connected to something like that. And now we're continuing that reuse vibe with the Fix-It events. And these will be free events where people bring in household items and get them repaired at no cost. And there's kind of a precedent that people are invited to learn about repairing while they're there, should they so desire, as well as that the Fix-It volunteers get to network with each other. So I would say it's highly likely at this event you're going to learn something in addition to getting your stuff fixed.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's like you also want to teach people these skills so that they can do that themselves. So at these Fix-It events, what kind of skills are you looking for? Because first you kind of want to have a group of people that you know you can rely on to be there for these events before you start really planning them out. So what kind of skills are we looking for?
Yes, exactly. It's a chicken and an egg situation where we don't know what we can offer to fix until we know who's willing to offer their skills. We are looking for people who like to tinker. Heidi, I heard you mention earlier about, you know, maybe one day you really got into it and looked something up on YouTube and you figured out how to repair your, you know, blender or whatever it was. That's terrific. That's a huge win. And maybe you're ready to take the next step. What we've found so far is that people can be a little bit shy about their repair skills. Like, oh, well, it's nothing. And then especially the older generation, you know, like, well, I've always had a huge toolbox. And of course, I can take those screws out and see what's inside. And people don't realize that that's something other people want to learn. Mm-hmm. So people who like to tinker, repair electronics, carpenters, and also sewers, mending, things as straightforward to some people. Again, like I said, repair can be very mysterious, but like hemming a garment or putting a button on.
Zippers. Even zippers are hard.
Right. I hear zippers are kind of the Maltese Falcon of repair, right? Either you do or you don't, right? Or you're always looking for someone who's willing to do zipper. But again, we want this just to be a friendly, fun environment. So if that sounds intriguing to you or you know someone who has those kind of skills, we are inviting people to fill out a survey.
So Jenny, let's get real. Do you have Fix-It skills yourself? Have you relied on some other people? Is this made any changes in your life thinking about, I'm not going to throw this thing away, I'm going to figure it out?
I am gaining confidence in my sewing skills. I'm a rug weaver, so I should, you know, be friends with my sewing machine anyhow. it ebbs and flows. But I'm more confident with my own. I hemmed a pair of jeans about 2 months ago. Uh-huh. And when I wear them to work, I say to my coworkers, these are the jeans I hemmed. Right? And everybody goes, ooh, ah, right?
Yeah.
Like I said, it's fun to see to gain confidence in what you can do.
That's funny because I just did a search last night on how to cut jeans instead of hem them because I have such little sewing skills, you know? So I was like, okay, there's gotta be a way. And then I was finding there's hemming tape or something that you can do instead, or that, you know.
Right. You can put that on for your hem. You then heat it with your iron.
Yeah.
Of course, you have to have an iron. Right. And, you know.
And it has to be a working iron. And maybe right. If your iron's not working, you could, you know, bring it to a Fix-It event.
And there's also fabric adhesive, Heidi. Depending on the fabric, you can glue. Mm-hmm. I know I've used a fabric adhesive repairing drapes.
Okay.
It is
And then maybe there'd be someone to teach me how to iron, for crying out loud. Like no one ever taught those skills. I think my mom must have just, I don't think we were an ironing family or something, but anytime I try it, I feel like I make it worse whenever I'm ironing. But anyway, you'll probably have some skills like that coming forward. Who knows what Happy Dancing Turtle will come up with.
Yeah, well, we certainly hope so. And so if you don't live in Pine River, all we're asking is that you would be willing to travel to Pine River as a volunteer for this event. We are tentatively scheduled for the end of September for our first Fix-It event. But then, as I say, just like our swaps, hope to continue offering more and more.
Yeah, the more people you can get involved and then people start to know about it and it can just go from there. That would be wonderful. And then maybe once people learn the skills, then they can be the people too to help others. So,
and then Jennifer's Sesame Street dreams.
All my Sesame Street dreams are coming true. Also, have you guys seen this show? It's a British show called, I think it's called The Repair Shop. And it's just lovely. You can find episodes on YouTube and it's the shop where people bring in like severely damaged, like kind of family heirlooms. And they do anything from jewelry. They restored a paper poster one time somehow, and they just like meticulously go through these things and restore them, and it's just like the sweetest little thing to watch. So I love that show too.
We opened something up in Jennifer.
Yeah, I guess so. So,
but back to the shy repair people again, like when you said the word heirloom, you know, again, this is what we will carefully set up our parameters for fix it events, like what we're able to repair and what we aren't. And people are advised when you bring your item in that our repairers are going to do their best. They're volunteers, but a repair is not guaranteed.
Yeah. Some things are just, you know, beyond, you know, what you can reasonably do for things, I guess.
We just got a text in saying the repair shop is an absolute comfort watch. So we're going to have to check that out. Okay.
It's like, if you like the Great British Baking Show, it's kind of like that, but repairing things instead of baking.
Huh.
So, yeah. Well, so how can people find this, this form to fill out? If
they can go to our website, happydancingturtles.org, and as if you scroll down, all our events are listed in an event carousel. Sorry to use website lingo there, but you can click on the event there and get linked to the survey. And also, I am happy to chat with people and about this in general, so you can send me an email, which is jhill@happydancingturtle.org.
All right.
Jenny, what kind of things do you have going on at Happy Dancing Turtle? Are there camps this summer, or what's going on there?
In the garden? Camp, so that's week-long day camps for kids. And then we also have family nature walks. That's something new. And those are out in the community. They don't happen here at Happy Dancing Turtle. We had one just at the Pequod Fire Tower two weeks ago, and then two other locations. And all those events are listed on our website as well.
Yeah, and then you also have a garden happening there, and then once a month there's like open garden time, correct?
Open garden, yep. You can just drop in and see how things are growing. So we aren't an organic garden, but we grow promoting soil health and with as few chemical inputs as possible. So it's really amazing. Our gardeners are funny, outspoken, and also very down to earth. So, I mean, you don't need to feel like, okay, I don't know which end of my tomato plant to which I'm looking at. They'll talk you through it. They'll share what they've done, and it's a great thing. And then also, I would want to mention our bingo scavenger hunt. We have one every season, and our summer bingo scavenger hunt will start July 15th. That people can participate from anywhere. It's a bingo card, 24 squares of things to observe out in nature. You snap a photo and send it in, and you are eligible for prizes. But the real win is just getting outdoors and seeing what's happening seasonally, as you guys well know.
For sure. Well, that is Jenny Hill with Happy Dancing Turtle. You can find more about everything they've got going on, as well as becoming a fix-it helper at happydancingturtle.org. Bright Spot is made possible with support from the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. Thanks so much, Jenny.
Yeah, thank you.
Coming up, more on the Monday morning show, we'll be bringing you a conversation with author Pat Brown, Seed Corn Must Not Be Ground. Before that, we've got the latest from the Up North Report, this one about a pizza garden in the Deer River area.
Right now, we're going to hear some new music. This is from Molly Elizabeth. It's called Run Rabbit. That is a song called Run Rabbit from Molly Elizabeth. Been seeing lots of rabbits running around here.
Oh my God. Right there, right as we speak. And
see it, heard the song.
While we were talking to Jenny, I got to see what you saw last Friday, the robin feeding a baby that doesn't look like a baby.
But it's like a little bird that doesn't want to grow up.
Right. Come on, teenager, get your own food. But yeah, fun stuff going on outside the window. We want to hear from you. What are you seeing? John Latimer last week had so much information about the different flowers. He was going through the yellow flowers, the white flowers, and there's so much happening outside right now and color and lushness. Because luckily we've gotten a little bit of rain, so we're not too dry. We may be getting some more in the next few days, but we're definitely getting humid, that's for sure.
We are. It's just in time for July and the upcoming 4th of July, and it's going to be humid. That's our question of the week, though. We want to hear about your 4th of July traditions. What things do you look forward to every year around the 4th, whether that's food, an event, or, a family thing? Text us, 218-326-1234. Support comes from Paul Bunyan Communications, offering technology for businesses, including cloud solutions, cybersecurity services, network management, and more, all with local customer service and support. Paul Bunyan Communications, Northern Minnesota's local broadband cooperative.
And you can rev up your favorite radio station, KEXE, with your car, truck, or boat donation. It's quick and easy, and your unwanted vehicle will be towed away for free. Visit KEXE.org/cars to start your car donation, or call Heather, 218-326-1234.
Temperatures right now in the mid to upper 60s throughout the region, going up to 85 to 92, our range of high temperatures today. We do have a chance of showers and thunderstorms, about 30% chance, mainly this afternoon, and then southeast winds 5 to 15 gusting higher. For tonight, showers and thunderstorms are likely with lows in the low to mid 60s, and then tomorrow sunny, highs in the mid to upper 80s. We'll have breezy southwest wind. And then looking ahead to Wednesday, mostly sunny. Again, a chance of showers and thunderstorms with highs 84 to 87.
The Minnesota Lynx played yesterday. They played Dallas Wings and wasn't able to see the whole game, but they won 85 to 77. So they continue their streak of, especially they're playing really well on the road. So Minnesota Lynx doing well. I was trying to see what their next game will be. This Friday they play the New York Liberty, so they'll be in Brooklyn, New York playing that game. So we'll see how that goes. Liberty were playing yesterday too, and they were the standout. They won a couple years ago, the whole shebang, and not playing as well even though they have some superstars on the team. So you can hear more about Football is Life. We're going to be hearing a little bit from National Public Radio, the World Cup, of course, going on. And we've been bringing you fun conversations about it each and every Friday. And that'll continue to happen this Friday, July 3rd. So if you have any questions about how the heck do they score, out there.
I'm always confused on the timing of the games.
Yeah. That big glove that the goalie has. Tom's trying to convince me that it's sticky. And that it just grabs the ball. I don't think that's true. So much fun to see. I know people are excited. Argentina played over the weekend, and Messi did play for part of that game because I can't remember who they played. We watched a little bit of that game, but
yeah, we will have a story from National Public Radio about the knockout round coming up. But first, we have the Up North Report, local news from our region. Today, a story from our report for Minnesota intern Aaron Bowman on a pizza garden in Deer River.
For KAXE News, I'm Aaron Bowman with a special edition of the Up North Report.
It'd probably just be like a lot of vegetables because I just like almost every vegetable. So it'd be like a lot of like tomatoes and stuff.
Rising seventh grader Paisley Washburn describes the slice of pizza she is hoping for. Over the past 3 weeks, she and other kids in Deer River have been prepping and planting a pizza garden outside of King Elementary School.
Plan is a pizza garden. So we're just planting whatever we can use for a pizza outside of like wheat and all that stuff. So we got like spices, peppers, tomatoes.
Boys and Girls Club youth programmer Ethan Thompson says the idea for a pizza garden came from the kids.
It's had an idea that they really wanted to do, and they were really passionate about it, so they started actually campaigning to do a pizza garden.
The plan is to host a community pizza party in September, using the ingredients kids grew over the summer, and maybe some pepperoni from the store. The community garden was previously run by the University of Minnesota Extension Master Gardeners Program and fizzled out during the COVID-19 pandemic. Thanks to funding and new leadership from community sponsors and programs, the garden experienced a makeover this summer. The garden includes 8 new raised beds with pizza ingredients and typical garden plants like carrots. The kids are also tending to 1 strawberry bed and 2 pumpkin patches. The pumpkins will be used at Deer River's annual pumpkin carving event, where around 100 pumpkins are provided for kids to carve. It's been going on for around 10 years. Kayleen Monticelli, director of the Boys and Girls Club and Community Education, says this year, funding for the pumpkins was cut.
It was a great time to just be like, we're growing our own pumpkins. So we're growing our own pumpkins this year.
The event is set to be hosted in October, like the pizza party. The event will be a full circle moment for the kids.
The kids are growing, they're carving, they get to bring them home. It'll be really neat.
So far, over 35 kids have contributed to the garden. Throughout the summer, youths from Boys and Girls Club, Community Education, Community Tech Hub, and Full Service Community School will tend to the plants. Full Service Community School's grant manager, Jaeger Jurgensen, has enjoyed seeing the children grow in the past 3 weeks.
Kids like to work. They'll live up to their expectations. And when you give them an opportunity to grow, it's just kind of the most rewarding thing from somebody on the outside to watch that they're having fun learning their own capabilities. I like when the kids kind of run with a project. Coming out, I spent a couple hours out here. I was like, why am I doing this when the kids would have way more fun with it? You know, this is meant to be for them.
Providing opportunities like the garden is important, Thompson says.
There's a lot of kids right now that just don't get to do stuff like this because, well, we just don't have a lot of access. This is expensive.
Jurgensen says the garden is an opportunity to show kids what effort can lead to.
Our goal at the end is to have a community banquet where the kids can grow pizzas, make some salsas, some community-grown foods with the stuff that's going on in the garden. Try to promote the idea that once they put some effort in, there's going to be some outpouring into the community, whether it's money, it's being able to provide food or something along those lines.
Thompson took over the garden when it needed a new steward.
He was very green thumb and had passion for growing, and so he took it on as his baby.
Thompson has led the garden effort for a few years. It wasn't until this summer, though, that his efforts fully took shape, thanks to some community partnerships. Forward Health Foundation, United Way, and Essentia Health provided funding for the garden.
None of this comes out of the school's budget or any of the employees' budget. This is all supported by community programs going on.
Not only is the garden back this year, but it's also larger. Thompson says the garden space has almost doubled in size from last year, going from around 50 square feet to 100 square feet.
We have the most stuff we've ever had. We have the most prep and planning that we've ever had. So this year, my biggest hope is that we actually get a big harvest.
Plants need to grow and time needs to pass before Deer River children get to taste their hard work, but it seems their pizza party plans are off to a strong start. That's it for this special edition of the Up North Report. Find more of our stories and photos at kaxe.org, where you can also find content from our music, phonology, and morning show teams. From the KAXE News Desk, I'm Erin Bowman, telling the stories of Northern Minnesota through local news.
The Up North Report is made possible by Woodland Bank, serving the area since 1920 with locations in Grand Rapids, Cohasset, Hill City, and Deer River. Woodland Bank believes in building community and serving local nonprofits like KAXE.
It's Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Leila Fadel.
And I'm Steve Inskeep. We're in the knockout stage at the World Cup, which is exactly what it sounds like. The field was cut to 32 countries, and from here on, any team that loses goes home. South Africa lost to Canada on Sunday. They're out. NPR's Jasmine Garst is traveling the United States covering the World Cup. Hi there, Jazz.
Hi.
Okay, so I keep hearing lots of conversation about the World Cup. I was running yesterday, and I hear the conversations of people going the other way, and there's a big group of bikers talking excitedly about France. Mm-hmm. So what's going on?
Oh my God, I have really been enjoying watching France play. Team captain Kylian Mbappe and right winger Ousmane Dembélé are just playing some beautiful football. Then, of course, I'm watching Argentina, the defending champions, led by one of the best players in the world, Lionel Messi. The big question is, could they do it again? But Steve, I think this World Cup, the big story is African teams, not just Cape Verde, but also Morocco is crushing it, Ghana, the Democratic Republic of Congo. African soccer is having a moment.
Yeah, dramatic game, dramatic win for Congo over the weekend. Now the United States plays Bosnia-Herzegovina on Wednesday. How is the U.S. approaching that game?
So the U.S. is coming off of a 3-2 loss in its final group stage match against Turkey. I should say the U.S. had already advanced to the knockout stage and already won the group before they even took the field against Turkey. So most of the starters, they didn't even play. And that game, the substitute players got some really valuable World Cup experience.
Right.
But now that we're in a knockout stage, forward player Folarin Balogun says it's more serious.
It's crunch time, you know, it's knockout football, and, you know, you lose, you go home. So, you know, this is the stage where, in my opinion, you know, the big players step forward and the big players, you know, carry the pressure and make things happen.
A reminder, Balogun scored twice in the opening game against Paraguay, and he says he's not done winning.
Okay, you mentioned African teams winning. Cape Verde played against Saudi Arabia, and you got to see them there in Houston where you are. What was that like?
Oh my God, Steve, it was insane. It was like 105 degrees outside the stadium.
What a break! Anyway, go on. They have them now. Go on.
It was still a huge party. It was a huge party. Cape Verde is like the Cinderella story of this tournament, right? It's their first World Cup. They're one of the smallest nations to ever make it. And their goalie, Bozinha, is like nothing is getting past that guy. Here's Vanessa Lavelle from Cape Verde. Outside the game.
We are a small island nation of 10 islands, and this is the first time we've made it to the World Cup. And, you know, our island is, we're quiet, we're small people, but we have big hearts. So this means a lot to us.
They tied 0-0 with Saudi, and now they're in the knockout stage. Next opponent is Argentina.
Big hearts. I love that. Big picture, what do you expect to see in the knockout stage games?
I mean, things are about to get much more tense and grueling. Now there's no such thing as a draw. If a team plays 90 minutes and they're even, they play an extra 30 minutes. If they're still tied after that, it goes to penalty kicks.
Yeah, that can be some of the most exciting soccer that there is. Jasmine, thanks so much. Jasmine Garst is one of the correspondents covering the World Cup for NPR News.
Again, I'm just loving this football music. I gotta say, that's one of the great things coming out of this World Cup is the fun music.
And learning geography, for crying out loud. All these countries, and it is really fun. I've taken on Malachi's route for the underdog sort of thing in any of the matches. Is that what it's called?
Yeah, you can call them matches.
All right. Football is live. Catch it this Friday at... Actually, we might have an extended version for the holiday, so we'll find out. And you can send in your questions. They will answer those. You can send 218-326-1234. Text it in.
Support for KAXE comes from the Move It Real Estate Group, assisting clients with real estate purchases and sales for over 25 years, not only in Grand Rapids, but across northern Minnesota. Move to what moves you. More at moveitrealestate.com.
And thanks to Edward Jones financial advisor, Christina Gallas, helping individuals and business owners reach their financial goals. EdwardJones.com. Member SIPC.
Coming up next, we have a conversation with author Pat Brown on her new memoir.
We'll be right back.
Coming up, an excerpt of a conversation with Dr. Pat Brown. She is the author of a new book that has been described as a breathtaking theological memoir. I'm Heidi Holton. The title is Seed Corn Must Not Be Ground, a memoir of survival and resilience.
Lay on me your ears and I'll sing you a song. I will try not to sing out of key. Yeah. Oh, baby, hide it now.
The thing that goes throughout your book is the seed corn and this phrase. And I wonder if you'd talk about that, what it means to you, and then kind of how it guided you as you put this book together.
Well, it's an image that has stayed with me for over 50 years. When I was a senior in college, I took a sculpture class just for no credit. The only class I ever took that way. And I kept making these figures of larger figures encompassing and protecting smaller figures. And the professor came in one day and he brought with the image, Seed Corn Must Not Be Ground, from Kathy Kollwitz's lithograph, and asked me if I had ever, if I knew this work. And I said, no, I didn't, but immediately connected with it, and it was reflecting in the work that I was doing. So I just held on to that image for 50 years, knowing that I wanted to write this book, could not do it. So when it was finally time to go ahead and give it a try, there was never any question of what the book would be called. It had to be. And part of the reason that title has stayed with me and has continued to feel right is that I never wanted this book to be just about me or my story. I wanted it to be emblematic of everyone's story. Mm-hmm. No matter what the details might be, we all struggle with the questions. And it wouldn't take very much to look in any moment of any day to where seed corn is being ground, and especially seed corn is an image for children. And so, you know, you can talk about Gaza, you talk about what I was thinking about when I was writing this book is the Uvalde, Texas massacre of those children had just happened. And we cannot keep sacrificing our children. So that image of seed corn just keeps coming back, stays still.
Isn't that amazing that a class that you thought was sort of a throwaway, which maybe opened you up in a different way, right? And then you may not have ever put those together to get this connection unless all those things had kind of been there for you.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it was, I don't know if it was no credit, it was pass fail.
Right.
And, you know, and I had been obsessive about all my other classes, and I wasn't obsessive about this at all. It was like just playing around because it didn't matter. And then, you know, his kindness in recognizing what I was doing and paying attention to this non-credit person. So it's this Peter Lepore, one of the kindest souls that has ever been on the planet.
There's so many people within this, whether it's writers or artists or people that have come into your life that have, it seems like they've been the seeds along your life path all along the way that led you to new things and got you through difficult times and just were there. So you grew up in St. Paul, and as you were growing up, as I was growing up, people did not talk about mental illness. People did not talk about when things were not what TV shows showed families. It was, we all pretended to be that all the time. Mm-hmm. And so there was always this unspoken thing of no matter, you know, as little or as big as what might be happening in a home, of like, you don't really tell people the real story, mm-hmm. you know? And yeah. You, I wonder if you want to, I don't know how you might want to explain your mom and sort of when you knew something wasn't right with your mom.
Well, I mean, I started out the book before I was born. And, you know, now we know how beings interact with each other. I think I knew before I was born that all was not well. Mm-hmm. And the other piece of what you're asking in terms of mental illness, we didn't even have that term. And I, with trepidation but purposely, did use the word madness in the book because there was a descent into madness. And I understand that that could be very problematic. I understand it could be offensive to some people, but nothing else felt true. A softer word, a more explainable word, didn't feel like it could capture the reality. And part of what had kept me from writing this book for so long was that I could not find words to the materiality of how it affected our lives. And so that was the first job. And I had to find the words for that in order to begin to explore the deeper questions.
After reading it, we need to understand kind of what your brothers and sister were living with, of this, of what your mom needed or expected of you all. And especially, I was really intrigued by you talking about, because you are likening it to some theology or religion, of this idea of surrogacy. So mm-hmm. that we are sort of, we're asked to be other roles than we should have to be as kids, mm-hmm. which is exactly kind mm-hmm. of what you're talking about mm-hmm. of the kids right mm-hmm. now of Uvalde, mm-hmm. of like, yep. they should have never had to have that role, yep. you know? Who did you feel like you had to be for the rest of your family when you were growing up?
Well, caretaker for my mom. Because, you know, and someone said recently something about her fastidiousness or what she required. She had no control over what was in control of her. Yeah. So it wasn't like she was demanding something of me. My father was, but not my mom. And literally trying to keep the younger kids alive, trying to keep her alive, trying to keep the younger kids alive. And not that that wasn't a ridiculous idea when looking back, but it was kind of true. I mean, it was literally also at the same time, it was true. Begging her to not run through the guardrails of the high bridge, you know, trying to talk her out of the knife drawer.
The rug stuck with me so much.
It has for other people too. And after dinner, we had this rug in the dining room that had fringe on the edges, and everything had to be so perfect for her that like combing the fringe on the rug took her an hour. And so I tried to give her a head start by doing it myself. So I'd get down on my hands and knees and comb the rug fringe after dinner. I mean, it was an insane idea to choose that rug to begin with, but you know, that was,
yeah.
What do you say? What do you do?
Well, and also to think about that in your family, there wasn't special times. I don't know that you mentioned this, but you mentioned that, you know, Christmas was not a big deal. Probably birthdays were not either, I'm guessing. Was there any mention of birthdays for you and your siblings, or?
Only in the most rudimentary way. You know, we'd get, there'd be a cake at dinner. And my sister's the youngest and I'm the oldest. Couple of things. One is, though, I was her mom more than mom was her mom. And even though we were 14 years apart and there were three brothers in the middle, how much things did not change was also remarkable mm-hmm. to us.
Yeah, what do you mean by that?
Well, the physical realities never changed. And the rules for secrecy never changed. And a lot never changed.
There are pivotal moments within your growing up and when you were living in your house where you found solace, whether it's in animals or words
or in, you grew up Catholic.
Mm-hmm.
It seemed to me it wasn't necessarily that you looked at the church or religion was going to save you, but the practice of something was going to do something for you.
That's really true. And really, it's complicated because it gave language and a space for some of the pain. But at the same time, it also enforced and not only enforced, but more like made holy sacrifice and surrogacy. And it, you know, that's if you give up, you're good. If you give up whatever you want or you need, that's good. So it was this really tensive combination of a place to rest and enforced strength and the kind of twisted messages that kept you in prison.
And probably ended up with these other things that we said of animals and people and nature that kept you, that's why you're here still, and that you're finding your spot in the world right now, being able to write this book and be able to work with other people to do work like this.
Absolutely. I mean, language, words, finding words, and animals, and trees, and planting trees, yes.
Let's talk about Simba.
I would love to talk about Simba. Mm-hmm. So Simba was a golden retriever who lived across the street from us in the very first house we lived in. So I was pretty young. And I would hide a piece of Wonder Bread in my pocket at dinner time and trot across the street after dinner. And when the older couple who owned Simba saw me coming across the street, they let her out into the backyard. And so I would go sit with Simba and cry into her fur and share the Wonder Bread with her. And I'm not even sure what to say. It was like that was Simba, you know, there is sort of a litany of things that saved me. Well, Simba certainly saved me. There was softness, there was dog slobber, there was, you know, how golden retrievers put their paws on you and claim you. I belonged to her. She was gentle. You know, she was everything that was absent.
Mm-hmm. Well, even so, that the couple knew that they were going to let you.
And I never thought about the fact that they knew that, but they were on watch for me to come across.
Oh, for sure.
They were waiting for me to let Simba out to be with me.
And did your mom or your dad know this relationship with Simba? Did they?
They may have, in a surface way, known. They had no clue what she meant.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. Yeah. If you think about I don't want to use words like normal, but a little girl that would, you know, we put this scenario differently. They would run home afterwards to tell your family about this dog and how wonderful you feel and how great it was to be around this dog. And they would share in that joy. Mm-hmm. Like that would be the hope, right? Mm-hmm. For every little girl for that to happen. But you at least got Simba.
I had Simba.
Yeah.
You know, and actually what you just said, Heidi, touched on something that I've thought about a lot in the course of all this. And one of the things that was so difficult to try to express is the complete affective feeling level deprivation. You know, that there was no going home to tell them how lovely Simba was. That was nothing that mattered to us mattered. But Simba got it.
That is author Dr. Pat Brown, and her new book is Seed Corn Must Not Be Ground, a memoir of survival and resilience. We'll be hearing more in the weeks to come from this extended conversation about healing, about family, about secrets, about theology, and the writers and thinkers that inspired Pat. You're listening to The Morning Show on People Powered KAXE.
Pat Brown will be at Wildflower Bookshop in Grand Rapids tomorrow from 4 to 6 for a book signing. The new memoir from Pat Brown is called Seed Corn Must Not Be Ground.
Yeah, Pat lived in the Grand Rapids area, Deer River area, for about 25 years, so is back this week, and friends are holding court and holding some receptions and things for her as she talks about the last few years in this work on her memoir. Kari Hedlund's going to be our host coming up for Headwaters in just a few minutes. We'd like to thank Music at Mount Itasca for supporting KAXE. It's on Saturday, July 18th from 3 to 8 p.m. Featured performers include Brothers Burn Mountain and Wild Child. Proceeds support Mount Itasca's ongoing programs and facilities. Tickets and more info at mountitasca.com.
Reminder for the request line today on Headwaters with Kari Hedlund. We are celebrating the passing of the Civil Rights Act of 1964 that happened on this date in 1964 in the U.S. Senate, and also the upcoming 250th anniversary of the United States this weekend. Kari wants to hear your suggestions for songs that are about civil rights and the complicated history of our nation as we commemorate these milestones. And at 1 o'clock today, David John, your volunteer host for On the River, and then coming up at 7 tonight, Mike Berry again with On the River. It's a great mix of music. Let's take a look at our current temperatures. We've got 69 in Brainerd, 68 in Bagley, 66 in Hibbing, 67 in Bemidji. Mostly cloudy today. There is about a 30% chance of showers and thunderstorms, that chance mainly this afternoon. Highs 85 to 92 with winds from the southeast 5 to 15, gusting higher. Showers and thunderstorms likely tonight with lows in the low to mid 60s, and then sunny tomorrow with highs in the mid to upper 80s and breezy southwest wind.
Tune in tomorrow for the Tuesday morning show. We'll bring you conversations about nature. We'd love to hear from you. You can text us photos or let us know what you are seeing. 218-326-1234.
We Are Water Minnesota is a traveling exhibit that explores the interconnected role of water in recreation, culture, community, and agriculture. It is on display now through August 10th at Itasca State Park's Lakeside Museum. And the Coleraine City Band concerts are Thursday evenings during June and July at 7 o'clock at the Longyear Park Log Gazebo. They serve free hot dogs at 6. You can find more events going on this week at KAXE.org. Look for events up north. Right now, it is time for Headwaters with Kari Hedlund.